A grown man, and I shall join the mature world of gainful employment to prove it.
Welcome to the official Plugged In podcast. I'm Bob Smithhauser, and as promised, this week we're going to take a look at the big screen comedy Arthur. No, not the old Dudley Moore film. There's a new remake starring Russell Brand as that spoiled playboy who needs to grow up. And here to tell us all about it is Plugged In associate editor Paul Acey. Hey, Paul.
Cheerio, good chap. Glad to be here.
Today we also get to hear from Christian Music's two-time male vocalist of the year, Brandon Heath. Brandon stopped by to talk about a particular media obsession he wrestles with and how it relates to a song on his latest CD, Leaving Eden. Also, Adam Holtz will join us with a little perspective on a viral sensation some people are calling the worst song ever recorded.
Yeah, Friday.
No, we'll tell everybody today. Just a little later on.
No, I mean the worst song ever is Friday by Rebecca Black.
Oh, actually, I think it's a tie between Betty Davis Eyes and 99 Luftballons.
Well, clearly you haven't heard Stacey Q's Two of Hearts.
Well, those are just our opinions. This week's podcast is brought to you by the new 4-DVD set, Charlton Heston Presents the Bible. Visit ancient lands and gain new insight into biblical history, all hosted by the Oscar-winning star of Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments. Available now on DVD. Okay, let's see what's making headlines.
And now, here's a little something we like to call Culture Clips.
You know, Bob, last time I was in London, I actually paid a visit to 221B Baker Street, which, if you are familiar with old 19th century British Victorian literature...
The address of Sherlock Holmes.
That is correct. They have a whole museum for him, which is very interesting, considering there is actually no 221B Baker Street. And there is no Sherlock Holmes.
Well, we knew that, right?
Well, we did, but apparently 20% of Britons, people who actually live in Great Britain, didn't know that. According to a poll by Ask.com, 1/5 of Britons didn't know that Sherlock Holmes was fictional. They didn't know that Miss Marple, Agatha Christie's famous detective, uh-huh, was a fictional character. And even the television show Blackadder was considered by many to be factual, which I thought was fairly interesting.
If I remember correctly, the clip also said there were some figures in American history that they thought were fictional.
Correct. People like Jesse James or Billy the Kid, Geronimo, they thought were fictional, just made up
Saturday
characters.
Morning cartoon.
Yeah, it's sort of an irony in that in today's culture, it seems like fact and fiction really get melded so much more closer together than they ever have before. But, you know, it's just interesting how that sort of works.
Well, it sort of reminds me of the jaywalking segment on The Tonight Show. You know, how you'd go out into the streets of L.A. and ask people relatively simple questions or show them pictures of people, and then their embarrassing responses would make it onto the program. And it really is kind of a condemnation of us in an information age. I mean, here we've got so much information available to us that we can't tell the difference between fact and fiction.
Well, and when you've got all this reality TV, which we know isn't necessarily complete reality, I think that it muddies the waters even more, don't
you? It does. I think so. And Paul, you know, my clip has to do with something about television as well, and that is TV Turnoff Week. Do you remember that campaign?
I do remember that.
Well, that's been going on since the mid-90s, and the idea was always to take a certain week each April to unplug the set and then kind of plug back into family and different activities didn't involve the television. Well, last year, the group behind it campaigned for a commercial-free childhood, changed the name to Screen Free Week, because obviously we're using screens differently, watching TV differently, and that makes sense, but I think it'd be a lot harder to do now, don't you?
Oh boy, it would be almost impossible today. You know, with all the screens that we use day in, day out, I mean, I'm in front of a screen, obviously, for part of my job, for 8 to 10 hours a day, it seems like. So it would be really, really difficult to step away from the computer screen or even the telephone screen that we have for our smartphones.
Yeah, we did this in the 90s as a family, and actually it did help give us some perspective on lifestyle and help us make some different choices about the TV we were watching. But yeah, you're right. Now, I mean, email, even music. We were laughing a little bit about music earlier, but even the music that we listen to, how often do we listen to it through the computer?
Yeah.
So families who decide they want to take this challenge, and I encourage them to do it, they may want to to modify it a little bit. It's coming up, Screen Free Week, April 18th through 25th this year.
Yeah, I'd love to participate in that myself, but I think I'd probably get fired.
Since we're talking about screen-related content people depend on pretty heavily, Plugged In has a Facebook page and a Twitter presence, as well as a free smartphone app for both the iPhone and Android. Paul, did you know that app has been downloaded 54,000 times over the past few months?
Yeah, and that's just our boss. I think that it's been downloaded by a few other people as well.
Learn about these and other Plugged In resources when you visit us at PluggedIn.com. Of course, if you're going to go screen-free, be sure to visit us before April 18th.
You don't understand that there's a macabre conspiracy to inveigle me into a loveless marriage.
Reach into your pocket, pull out the ring, and say four little words.
Okay. I don't love you.
Try again.
That's Russell Brand and Jennifer Garner in a pretty faithful update of the 1981 romantic comedy Arthur. Paul, for folks who've never seen the Dudley Moore version or just don't remember much about it 30 years later, give them a basic plot line.
Yeah. Arthur is essentially this very rich, often drunk man-child who's heir to this huge fortune. His mother is a little concerned that that Arthur is not mature enough to handle, you know, take the reins of the family business. And really, from what we can see from Arthur, she really has a pretty good
point. Yeah, she's
right. So in order to sort of help him mature, she is trying to encourage him pretty strongly to marry a very strong-willed woman who he used to date named Susan. As a matter of fact, she says that if he doesn't marry Susan, she'll cut off the fortune from him.
That's right. And that's the Jennifer Garner character.
Yeah, that's correct. And now the thing is, that would be fine with Arthur in a way because he really loves the money, even though he doesn't love Susan very much. But he falls in love with this other woman, this tour guide named Naomi. Just falls head over heels in infatuation with her. And so all of a sudden he's dealing with this push-pull of whether he marries for the money or deserts his fortune for this woman who he really cares for. And that's sort of how we're set up here.
Yeah. Well, Paul, the original Arthur was rated PG. This one's PG-13. Of course, the PG-13 rating wasn't around back in 1981.
Right.
But even so, this one seemed to go out of its way to show Arthur's playboy antics in a little bit more explicit ways. There are probably more discreet ways that the director could have implied he was a womanizer, but there's nothing discreet here.
There's really nothing very discreet here. And granted, the whole plot of Arthur is going to be problematic to begin with, because the guy is drunk for a good 70% of the movie.
And a happy drunk.
I mean, and a happy
kind
drunk.
Kind of a throwback, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's sort of glamorizing the idea of alcohol making you happy and free and all that kind of stuff. So there is a glamorizing aspect to it. But we also see a lot of Arthur's antics with women. And we know that we're told several times that he hires prostitutes. We know that some of the women who he hangs out with are not of the best moral character. We hear a lot of talk about, trysts in Copenhagen and venereal diseases and all sorts of things that we won't get into too great a detail here.
Right.
We've probably gotten into too much detail already.
But it does help parents to understand, because I don't remember, I've not seen the 1981 version in a long time, but sometimes we can kind of romanticize, remember sort of the turnaround, the way that he ends up in the film. And in this one, actually, he ends up in an AA meeting, and he does clean himself up, and there's some good things going on there. But you're right, it's an awful long way to go seeing the problem before we get to the solution.
Well,
but let's give him credit for that. Let's talk about the solution a little bit.
Yeah. One of the things that I actually really like about this movie is that it does come to sort of this point where Arthur realizes that he has a problem. And it's not just a happy, neat little bow that the movie ties on at the end. I mean, it sort of does, but at the same time, when Arthur makes the right decision, and he does make the right decision, he leaves the money, essentially, to find Naomi.
Who is a very sweet, very innocent character.
Yes.
I mean, this is not anything like the other woman he's been around.
Absolutely. Very, very, very sweet. Almost too sweet, it seems like, at times. But he leaves the money to find Naomi, and Naomi actually rejects him at first, which I thought was a really powerful part of the movie, because, you know, Arthur essentially, at the moment, was looking for more of a babysitter. And so we go through about 6 months, which we don't see on screen, but 6 months where he sobers up and learns how to really take care of himself. And I think one of the most poignant parts of the movie is when he comes back to Naomi and tells her, "It was unfair of me to ask you to take care of me, when all I want to do in the entire world, the thing I want to do most in the entire world, is take care of you." And I thought that was really a very, very poignant moment.
Great moment. Not a great picture.
Not a great picture because, again, you do have to wade through so much stuff to get there. And it's almost sort of like the obligatory happy ending after you've been sort of excusing his behavior throughout the entire movie.
Okay. Well, as always, Paul's detailed review of Arthur is available on our website, where you can also read about the number one movie in America the last couple weekends, Hop, which, coincidentally, also stars Russell Brand, or should I say, the voice of Russell Brand. You'll find both at PluggedIn.com.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity.
It didn't take long for Brandon Heath to leave his mark on Christian music. His first album debuted in 2006. Since then, he's developed a reputation for challenging us with songs of compassion. And here's an interesting bit of trivia. If he wins Male Vocalist of the Year when the Dove Awards are handed out next Wednesday, he will have won 3 years in a row.
Man.
We sat down recently to talk about media and the way we interact with it, and Brandon began by confessing to an entertainment obsession that, well, some people don't automatically think of as entertainment.
I would be the first to admit that I'm pretty guilty at submerging myself in the news. I watch a lot of CNN, Fox News, and I think my homepage is Drudge Report. So between the three of those, I want to know what's going on in current events. And sometimes I wonder if it doesn't breed a lot of fear in us, because a lot of times the things that are on the news are sensationalized, or they're just negative or scary. So,
and they feel a lot closer to home than they used to in generations past too. The world's gotten smaller, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I think because of our capability of seeing, you know, I know recently watching what's going on in Cairo, you see in real time, you know, what's going on. And it seems like our focus just seems to pinpoint in on where it's the worst. And so for me, I think personally, a lot of my own attitude or optimism or skepticism often comes from just watching the news. So, and news is kind of entertainment anymore. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, maybe some people make poor choices, and I can only speak for myself. Hopefully, I'm making good choices.
Well, one of the good choices you've made is your new CD. It's called Leaving Eden, and we're going to talk about the title track in just a minute, but I did see a quote from you that I wanted to get a little more information about. You said, in terms of innocence, and that's obviously a concern of a lot of parents and where their children are growing up in this culture, you said, I feel like I have a choice not to eat the apple anymore and to protect what little innocence is still left in my life.
Right.
Explain that.
You know, I was listening to NPR, and I was on my way home, and there was a woman who died in a conflict in Iran when they had their last election in Iran. And a lot of people thought that there was something not quite right with the election, like it was fixed. And so there were a lot of protests in Iran. And there was a young woman that got shot on the street, and somebody captured it on their camera phone. And they were talking about how she would be the face of the conflict. And it was so interesting because as soon as I got home, I wanted to see this clip. I wanted to see what they were talking about on NPR. And so as soon as I got home, I found it on YouTube and I watched it. And I saw this woman, I saw her die. And I felt like there was something in me that died with her. It was just, it was evidence that there is innocence still left in me. After all the images and all the things that I have experienced, there are still things that I think God has protected. But I've made some poor choices, I think, on what I've allowed myself to see. And so when I saw this woman die on the internet, I immediately thought, I needed to protect. I felt like there were some green spaces still left in my heart. And instead of just taking those out, I'd like to cultivate those a little bit better and grow something. And it was like there was evidence of Eden that was still there.
Yeah. Let's use that as a means of transitioning into your song.
Yeah. Leaving Eden really came from a conversation that I was having with my friend Lee Thomas Miller, who is a big country writer and helped me write that song. And when I walked in to write with him that day, he had the title Leaving Eden when I walked in. But it immediately made me think about the headlines that we see on the news every day. And for me, it's just evidence that we, you know, all the things that I see on the news are one more step away from perfection. It's clear that we've left Eden a long, long time ago. And if we can't, if it's a little bit too far to return, I mean, we can't go back. I'd love to know that I'm walking in the direction of hope rather than the continuing on this path of hopelessness. So, there's a point in the song that it talks about, I'm going home. There's no place like home when you're leaving Eden. So for me, I love the idea, if I'm leaving Eden, I want to know that I'm heading to the new Eden, which is heaven.
There's a line in that track that says, if it weren't for my TV, I wouldn't know what's real. And
yeah.
And of course, the tongue is slightly implanted in cheek, I think, when you say that.
Uh-huh. I would say reality TV has been, if there's any form of entertainment that has been culturally transforming, it would be reality television, you know, with
America. And reality is in quotes.
Yeah, in quotes. Yeah. I don't know how real it is, but American Idol would be one of those, which I think is obviously a lot more wholesome. But, you know, there are some more that I could name, but I think a lot of our youth are taking cues from those people who are on those shows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any kind of background to media training or whatever. I mean, it's just all out there on television. So for me, I think we take our cues from reality television, and people really think that's real, but somebody's writing a script somewhere.
Brandon's hits include, of course, Give Me Your Eyes, I'm Not Who I Was, and Now Your Love, which is doing very well. The new album is Leaving Eden. Brandon, thanks for taking a few minutes to be with us today.
Thanks for having me in.
Paul, Brandon mentioned that young people are taking their cues from reality TV. You're a television expert. What evidence have you seen of that lately?
Yeah, I think that's really true. We've actually seen studies that some of these shows can influence teens in a good way. Mm-hmm. The show 16 and Pregnant, there's actually been a study done that 82% of the people who watch that show, as vile as it is, they actually think about the causes and effects of pregnancy a little bit more seriously after watching the show. Now, anecdotally, we also kind of can get the sense that some of these kids might be searching for fame in the wrong way. I mean, they see these teens, pregnant teens on screen, see them in the magazines, and there might be a certain impulse for some of these teens to say, you know what, the best way for me to become famous is get pregnant.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. You know, he also sees himself as kind of a news junkie. Can you relate to that?
I really can. You know, it's sort of an addicting thing, you know, and they call them news junkies for a reason. I wouldn't say I'm a news junkie, but I'm a casual newser. Would that be fair to say?
Okay.
It's pretty addicting stuff.
Well, I can't help but think that a lot of Brandon's lyrics, if you've heard them, come out of this tender heart for people, and that may be what motivates him to want to know what's going on in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of which, there is a strange viral phenomenon occurring online at the moment, and it has to do with a 13-year-old singer who's finding out that instant celebrity isn't always what it's cracked up to be. Here's Plugged In Senior Associate Editor Adam Holtz with a little perspective.
That's a snippet of 13-year-old Rebecca Black's viral smash Friday. The California teen recorded the song in its video at the vanity music company Arc Music Factory and hoped a few friends might check it out. 99 million YouTube views later, this innocuous ditty about a teen's weekend plans has been scathingly derided as one of the worst songs ever. Black has taken the criticism in stride, but I think the whole Friday phenomena shows two things. First, the internet continues to be a remarkably powerful and remarkably unpredictable platform for musicians and fame seekers in general. I'm sure Black had no idea that nearly 100 million people and counting would watch her video. Second, the internet continues to be a place where people feel free to too free to unleash harsh, vulgar, and mean-spirited criticism. And for parents whose teens and tweens have likely been among Friday's many millions of viewers, it's worth taking some time to talk through both of those realities.
Thank you, Adam. Well, I think with that, we can call it a podcast. Glad you could be with us. In just a minute, we're going to sign off with a song by our special guest, Brandon Heath, called It's No Good to Be Alone, just one of the great tracks on his Leaving Eden CD. But before we do that, I need to give props to the other guys who made this week's show possible, Paul Lacey, Adam Holtz, and our producer, Dave Salkeld. Hey, today I wanted to leave you with a thought from God's Word. It comes from Colossians 2:8. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. Good advice. Of course, at Plugged In, we have another way of saying that. Remember, it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.
Message on your telephone. Everybody's wondering what you're doing home. You were starting and you're missing the party. Can you hear it playing your favorite song? Everybody's singing, but something's wrong. Cause you're missing. Hey, are you listening? Hey, are you listening? It's no good. It's no good to be.